from the KERA Newsroom. I'm Justin Martin. In a few minutes, a new census number shows Texas has more uninsured people than any other state. We'll start with tonight's top news. A 14-year-old Muslim boy from Irving who was suspended and handcuffed for taking a homemade clock to school. This afternoon, Ahmed Mohammed and his family talked at a press conference outside their home.
I built the clock to impress my teacher, but when I showed it to her, she thought it was a threat to her. So it was really sad that she took a wrong impression of it, and I got arrested for it later that day.
And now the freshman says he might not go back to MacArthur High School. He's suspended until tomorrow. Earlier today, police said they wouldn't press charges. Khaled Hamida, a lawyer who spoke at the press conference, said this could have happened anywhere.
On behalf of all Muslims, we're not here to point fingers either at the teacher or the police department. Although mistakes were made, we realize that the climate that exists with this manufactured hate, manufactured fear in our community could lead to something like this.
KERA's Chris Connolly will report on the case tomorrow on Morning Edition. The refugee crisis in Europe is being felt here in North Texas. At least 72 Syrians have been resettled across the state so far. And with President Obama promising to take in at least 10,000 more, J.D. Newsom tells KERA's Sam Baker that Refugee Services of Texas is ready.
It has to do with the economy and their ability to quickly get jobs and become productive members of society.
Also, the diverse population helps, doesn't it?
Houston and Dallas, for example, are incredibly diverse cities. The Syrians, for example, there is a small community developing in Dallas right now that is going to benefit the Syrian refugees who come later. They'll have a neighbor that they can go to and talk in the same language and have that common bond.
And what type of jobs are they getting?
In Dallas, for example, they range from light manufacturing to maybe working in a hotel to, in some cases, food processing. It's a variety of jobs. A lot of them are low skill because of the language barrier.
Which then would bring up the resettlement process. Can you describe what that is, what the steps involved are?
Meet them at the airport when they arrive, and we'll have an apartment arranged for them. Over the course of the first 3 months, we'll enroll the kids in school, enroll the adults in English classes so they can learn some survival English, and we'll start that job search for them. They're expected to go to work very quickly.
How long does that process last?
The initial resettlement process is 3 months. We've got some programs that last for 8 months to help them with cash assistance and case management to really get them on their feet. They're eligible for refugee services for up to 5 years. After that five-year mark, they are eligible for citizenship.
Who makes the decision that they're allowed to come to the United States?
Most of the refugees resettled to the United States are referred through the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. There's a very long process and a security background clearance for all refugees. Those can take upwards of 18 to 24 months. Once travel ready, each refugee family is allocated to a local city. If they don't know anybody in the United States or have no existing family, it's really going to be luck of the draw where they end up.
When the refugees arrive, in particular those from Syria, what have they said to you directly or what have you heard indirectly about their journeys from that point to here?
The Syrian stories are pretty horrific. We resettled a case in Fort Worth where the daughter had her leg amputated due to a bombing. The son was disfigured due to a separate bombing. Imagine if you were a parent trying to protect your kids. Their only choice was to flee Syria. Luckily, they made it to the United States, and they're now safe and secure, starting a new life.
We're in the midst of debate here about immigration. Have any of the refugees you've worked with, be it from Syria or anywhere else, have they ever encountered any pushback of any type?
I think so. The biggest difference with refugees compared to other immigrants is they're coming to the United States not out of choice. They're coming to the United States because they have nowhere else to go. They'd much rather be at home, but because of the circumstances at home, they cannot go back. And that's why the refugee program exists. It's a humanitarian program. It's an example of American excellence, of us being a world power and being able to take in the most vulnerable and needy people of the world.
J.D. Newsom, thank you for being with me.
Well, thank you.
J.D. Newsom is Vice President of Refugee Services of Texas. new numbers are out today from the U.S. Census Bureau about income, poverty, and health care. The headline, a big drop in the number of uninsured Americans since the Affordable Care Act passed. Even in Texas, which refused to expand Medicaid or create its own insurance exchange, 700,000 more people had health coverage last year than the year before. KERA's Courtney Collins has been digging into the stats all day and joins me now. Hi, Courtney.
Hey, Justin.
More people with insurance is a good thing, but Texas still ranks pretty low nationwide.
Texas is actually dead last, both in its number and percentage of uninsured citizens. There was a big drop in the state's uninsured rate. It went from 22% in 2013 to 19% last year. That's the biggest reduction Texas has seen this century. According to the Center for Public Policy Priorities, an advocacy group based in Austin, other states that expanded Medicaid coverage, like Arkansas and New Mexico, saw even bigger drops, 4 percentage points plus in each state.
What do the reports say about people living in poverty?
Well, we don't have state-by-state breakdowns on that yet. Those come out tomorrow, actually. Nationwide, the poverty rate from 2013 to 2014 was flat. There are some really interesting demographic trends, though. For example, the overall family poverty rate was about 11.5%. Married couples with kids only live in poverty 6% of the time, but families run by a single dad have a poverty rate of 15%, and almost a third of those headed by single moms live in poverty.
This report included something called the Supplemental Poverty Measure. What is that?
The official poverty rate only takes pre-tax income into account, but the Supplemental Poverty Measure includes benefits like tax credits, food stamps, and housing assistance. One thing that's important to note here is including tax credits and benefits results in lower poverty rates for some groups. For instance, the supplemental poverty rate was lower for children than the official rate, 16.7% compared with 21.5%.
I'm curious, how did last year's numbers compare to those from before the Great Recession?
One that stuck out to me was the increase in the number of shared households. A shared household has an extra adult living there. That's not someone who's a spouse or a student enrolled in school. In 2007, before the recession, there were 19.7 million shared households. By 2014, the number jumped to almost 24 million. That could imply that more adult children are moving in with their parents, or maybe more adults are getting roommates to save some money.
That's KERA's Courtney Collins. Thanks, Courtney.
Happy to do it.
Today on Think, a linguistic look ahead to tonight's Republican presidential debate. This afternoon, Chris Boyd asked James Pennebaker of the University of Texas at Austin what he learned about the candidate's speaking styles from the first debate.
Another issue that I've been looking a lot at in the last few years has been something that we are calling analytic thinking. People who write and use language where they're using lots of prepositions in articles and really low rates of things like pronouns, they tend to be more psychologically distant, but they also are more formal in their thinking. So Cruz was actually very high in this analytic thinking, very informal thinking, and there were some others that were in that. The person who was by far the lowest, Trump. Trump talks as though he's not very smart. Now, I think he is smart, but he's not a formal, logical thinker. You know, he shoots from the hip. He doesn't analyze problems deeply and thoroughly, and it comes through in his language.
On Saturday, James Pennebaker will teach a one-day university class in Dallas called The Secret Life of Language, The Remarkable Things Our Words Say About Us. This hour of Think re-airs tonight at 10, or you can listen to the podcast at kera.org/think. For the evening, should be mostly clear, low around 75. Tomorrow, sunny with a high around 96. And tomorrow night, mostly clear with a low around 76. It's 91 degrees in Dallas, 92 in Fort Worth. You can follow KERA News on Twitter or like us on Facebook. From the KERA Newsroom, I'm Justin Martin.